If you think about the stock market, most of the investors in the stock market are passive, right? They're index funds, they're mutual funds, they're exchange-traded funds. Many investors trade all the time. It's a very healthy thing for the market to have someone place a bet where they buy 10% of a company and where they take a business that has underperformed for 10 years and bring in a CEO like Hunter Harrison and turn around a railroad. That's a great thing for the market, and it's a very healthy thing for the economy.
You're about transactions. You know, you want to buy, and then you want to sell, and you want to make a huge profit. Now, it may be you want to buy after 10 years or 15 years, sell after 15 years. But it's a transactional thing. Rather than spending a whole lot of money to really run a business and create a product and do all those kinds of things, you know the argument. Even Paul Volcker's made this argument. Too many people are going to Wall Street, too many smart people, and working with you. And it's all about transactions, about building something.
Well, let me take a counter to that in terms of what we do. So we're not about transactions at all. In fact, we do very few transactions, maybe one or two a year.
Okay.
We buy stakes in businesses.
You're not a pure trader.
We're not a trader at all. We don't trade. We buy a stake in a business. We get actively involved in the business. We work to make the business more valuable. And by the way, pretty much everything we've ever owned, with the exception of Borders, has a higher value today than it did after we sold it, which means that the impact that we've had on the business has been positive. I'm also an executive officer of a business. I'm the chairman of the board of a company called Howard Hughes. This is a business that I created. It's a business I created by taking 34 assets outside of General Growth, sticking them into a new company, recruiting a management team, building a board of directors. And this company is doing marvelous things. So, for example, in New York City, we own the South Street Seaport. Management team, again, I want to take credit for their work, but what they've accomplished is they've got approvals to do a new they're going to completely transform the seaport. They're going to do a new development there. We're building a new shopping center in Las Vegas. We're changing kind of the landscape in Hawaii with a 60-acre development of 9 million square feet of real estate. So these are companies that are building and adding enormous value, and the business that would not have happened were we not to have taken a stake in General Growth and spun off that entity.
What about Procter & Gamble?
Procter & Gamble, great company. We've 175 years of, generally pretty fabulous successes.
Mm-hmm. Great brand names.
Great brand names. Last 4 years have been very difficult for the company.
Yeah. And you came in adamant to remove Bob McDonald.
We thought it was time.
He was CEO.
And by the way,
hadn't been there that long.
He had been there about 4 years.
Okay, that's not
and,
a long time.
And he had been with the company, obviously, a long period of time. Yeah. And, because most of the capital in the stock market is passive, investors can't themselves make these kind of changes.
Okay,
so they rely on someone to take a lead, which we did in Procter & Gamble. By the way, in Procter & Gamble, I worked very quietly with the lead director. We would speak periodically. It was only when we felt it was time that I made a public presentation about what the concerns were at P&G. And a couple of weeks later, Bob, I think, resigned of his own doing. Now, that stock's gone, it's up 35%.
And the former CEO's come back, one of the legendary names.
A.G. Lafley's a fabulous CEO, and I think he's going to do a great job turning the business. He's also working on recruiting the next founder of the company. But as I got enormous number of phone calls from Procter & Gamble alums thanking us for the work that we did at P&G. And the same thing is true at General Growth. I mean, if you look at the Buxbaum family, had a $5 billion net worth going into the financial crisis. That was down to $25 million when the General Growth stock went from $63 a share to 20 or 30 cents. We helped take it back to $34 a share. That's been a great thing, not just for a wealthy family, but for the pension funds that own that stock, for I get thank you notes from investors who've invested alongside us.
So what's the drive for you? What's the motivation?
I think what we do is important. I think I'm making, I do a lot of...
So you're making companies stronger because you come in and you have a certain amount of power because you have a certain amount of investment, and therefore you would like to say that if you look at your track record, you do much better in making companies stronger than you do in weakening companies in any way.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I don't think anyone would ever accuse us of weakening a business. Now, JCPenney, not every investment is going to work out. There was more risk in JCPenney than pretty much every other investment we've made because of the nature of the changes that were required.
So what was the attraction for you? There was more risk than anything else you've ever done.
The potential for reward, right?
And what's the reward?
If you look at...
The reward is simply how much money you make for you?
No, look, I don't...
keep score or what?
No, I don't need more money. I'm not motivated by financial returns. I'm motivated by one, I want to have a great track record. If you look at Buffett, he's had a 60-year track record. So I've got... I'm 20 years in, but the record's been good so far. But, I'd like to have one of the best track records in the business.
What's the annual growth?
I'm not allowed to comment on returns. That's an SEC restriction. But the you can look around there. I'll tell you, they're quite good. But what I like, you know, I've done a lot of philanthropic work over the last number of years. I actually think I make a much greater contribution through what I do in my for-profit activities than I do in my not-for-profit activities.
And not only that, you've signed a giving pledge.
That is true.
Right.
That is true. That's very true.
Meaning that you don't want to leave it to your children, you're going to leave it to half of it at least.
Yes.
To charity.
Well, more than half.
Yeah.
Well, more than half. But what's, I think what people forget is, you know, Wall Street has, unfortunately, in the last, certainly since the crisis, gotten a pretty bad name. But Wall Street is responsible, is probably the biggest engine for job creation, you know, enabling businesses to access capital, enabling businesses to grow. I mean, you look at Howard Hughes was a creation out of thin air. It's now a business that employs, you know, it's going to ultimately employ thousands of people, create a ton of jobs.
Do you think the criticism of Mitt Romney during the campaign for his activities in running a private equity firm went there?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I think... good private equity investors create a lot more economic value than they destroy.
And grow more jobs than they save?
They grow a ton of jobs. I think the biggest risk with private equity...
Save jobs that would be going away.
The biggest problem with private equity is there are periods of time when private equity firms use too much leverage, which puts too much pressure on a business and risks a business's failure. Mm-hmm. Putting aside that, I think you know the top private equity firms create a lot of economic value.
Too much leverage and too much was part of the problem of the... economic recession we went through.
Mm-hmm. But we're not going to save the country with philanthropy, despite the fact I'm philanthropic. I don't think that's going to solve our economic issues.
What will save the country?
We'll save the country our good economic policies that create the right incentives and a administration that's supportive of the business community. I think that's actually very, very important. And, policies that will make us competitive globally. You know, it's a global economy. There's a story today, I think, in today's journal about companies merging with European businesses to move their operations offshore from a tax point of view. We have to have a tax policy that discourages that kind of activity.
So you can bring the money home.
Yeah. I mean, I look at the United States.
Is that the idea, have a tax policy so that the money can come home rather than leaving offshore so you don't have to pay taxes on it?
Yes. But I think if the United States is not dissimilar to the kind of companies we invest in. We invest generally in very good companies that have lost their way. And with better management, enormous value can be created. If you look at Canadian Pacific, this was a dying
That's
railroad.
That's one of your investments.
And it's a dying railroad under Hunter Harrison in a very short order. You know, less than a year and a half, he's made dramatic changes to the business. The president is the CEO of this business that we call America. And the decisions he makes with respect to the way incentives are designed, the way he works with Congress as a leader in effectuating policy change can make an enormous difference in the growth rate of the country, in job creation, in happiness, in our safety. I think that we can't diminish the importance of business and business practices. I mean, you look at what Bloomberg has accomplished as a mayor of New York City. He took his for-profit mentality and has applied it to a city. And I think the city has accordingly thrived. I'd love to see the same thing happen for the country.
It's tough management, too.
Yeah. It's also, he has the benefit of independence.
Financial independence.
It's an enormous benefit.
So you're not obligated to anybody particularly.
Very important.
So we should only elect rich people?
No. But we should, I think that there's a lot to be said to have someone with a business background making decisions about the economy.
Just because I don't quite understand this, I mean, is hedge fund performance down?
If you look at the overall statistics, yes.
And why is that?
The answer is I think there are a lot more participants. I think that there have been.
So it looked like it was just a sweet place to be, and it's less sweet now.
It's become a much greater percentage of the amount of capital that's invested,
right,
and the
right.
scale, by just the math, makes it harder for that capital to grow at a high enough rate. I also think there's been some regulatory change that's made it harder for certain kinds of hedge funds to make money. You know, I think it used to be that, people could, you hear of hedge funds that would just, ask enough questions that they would get answers ahead of the market. I mean, there was some bad behavior that took place and the government put in place.
We've had some insider trading issues as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the crackdown on that stuff has maybe taken away some of the bad returns from the business. But I think the biggest driver has been the fact that the business has scaled. But look, it's just like the mutual fund industry. As a collective, it's not particularly attractive place to invest your money. But there are a few very good mutual fund managers who've done a lot better than the market over time. Same thing's true for hedge funds. Same thing's true for investors in real estate.
If you weren't an investor, what would you be?
That's a good question. I mean, I would do what I do now even if I weren't compensated for doing it. Because I think it's a way for me to make the biggest contribution that I can make. I mean, I think about government if I could effectuate change the same way I can effectuate change in the private sector. But I think I can have more influence as a private participant than a public participant. Thanks.